You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here on this cold, sunny day for Leonard Lopate. And as you just heard earlier this afternoon, the jury in the perjury trial of Lewis Scooter Libby returned its verdict. Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, was found guilty of perjury, obstruction of justice, and lying to the FBI. I have the great pleasure right now to have Brian Lehrer from The Brian Lehrer Show and Brooke Gladstone, who's host of On the Media, here in the studio on the other side of the table from where they usually sit, to talk about what this means. Brooke, what do you see in this verdict?
Well, there are a couple of things from the media perspective. One is that there was at least one Republican legal honcho who said in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago that this is a ridiculous case. It's all hearsay. It's a kind of he said, either you believe Russert or you believe Libby, and simply the jury believed Russert in this case. And it's curious because although we hear about study after study how basically disrespected the media are, in this particular case, it basically backs up one study, an ABC News poll 2 years ago, that said that in most cases, the public is more likely to believe press over government by a margin of 2-1.
Right. But, you know, I was just listening to a juror give a news conference, and it really sounds like, and I've kind of thought this all along, anyone who said it was just he said versus he said, Tim Russert's word versus Scooter Libby's word, that was just a Republican talking point.
Right.
Because the juror said they spent a week reviewing the building blocks of the evidence. And remember, it took them 10 days to come to this verdict.
I know, just taking that long for this verdict I found very interesting.
So he said a week of that time was spent reviewing the building blocks of the evidence, and they concluded that Libby was told about Valerie Plame at least 9 times before the meeting with Tim Russert, where Libby claimed Russert told him for the first time.
So it could be a he said against he, she, and he said.
Precisely. And as a matter of fact, as Jeff Toobin said this morning on CNN, given how carefully the jury went over this case and returned 3 guilty counts and 1 non-guilty count, that the fact that Wells, Libby's attorney, is going to call for another trial, which is usual in these cases, he probably won't get it because the jury was clearly very deliberative and was not acting in a reflex against an increasingly unpopular administration.
The juror said another interesting thing, too, that there was actually a tremendous amount of sympathy for Libby on the jury because they saw him as the fall guy.
Hmm.
And they kept wondering, where was Karl Rove? He said that. We asked ourselves, where was Karl
Rove?
Not
where was Dick Cheney?
Well, and that he was cast by the vice president. Again, this juror's word, cast by the vice president, to go and talk with reporters. So they did see him as the fall guy, and the jury used that expression too. They saw Libby as the fall guy. So there was this incredible sympathy for him. But we know that Cheney never testified, Rove never testified,
Of them were ever accused of anything.
And neither of them, that's correct. So Libby was the only one who had, at least, you know, with evidence that could back it up, committed a crime. And they felt, despite the sympathy, that they had to convict him.
We were trying to think, you know, what is going to be the legacy of this trial? How will we remember it? I mean, everybody remembers that Al Capone went up the river because of tax evasion. Some people aren't going to necessarily remember that Watergate was principally a perjury trial and that this one, if indeed only one person gets imprisoned, it's going to be because of perjury, not because of the underlying malfeasance, misfeasance. In fact, we don't even know if any actually occurred legally. So this is really about the cover up. And you wonder, how long is it going to take people in Washington to understand this point? And are we going to remember it this way, or are we going to remember it as the Bush administration trying to diss somebody who was dissing them, Joseph Wilson, Valerie Plame's husband?
You know, Brooke, you raised the question of someone going to prison. Someone already has gone to prison because of this case. And so there is a question, too, about how the verdict in this case will reflect on Judith Miller not talking to the special prosecutor.
Well, I have to say that many lawyers who initially were behind Judith Miller and as well as the entire media establishment decided that this was a disastrous case in order to test reporter privilege, whether or not they ought to have the right in cases, in national cases, to to keep those sources anonymous. Obviously, in a vast majority of states, I think 41, there's either a law or a kind of provision that would grant at least a qualified privilege to reporters to allow them, in most cases, though not in criminal cases, to keep their sources secret. And they, you know, there's a renewed call for a national shield law. The trouble is, Judith Miller is not the standard bearer you want for this campaign.
And yet, I think that for all that major news media figures got embroiled in this case, and maybe Tim Russert didn't look that great on the stand that day, I think the news media came out pretty well, mostly on two points. One, Judith Miller from The Times did go to jail for months rather than reveal a source. And whether this was the perfect case on which to test that or not, she became a poster child for that piece of integrity in journalism.
Perhaps that's what leads to that poll of trusting journalists over trusting politicians.
But secondly, except for Robert Novak, reporters who were leaked Plame's identity, which was kind of a dirty business, never used it in their stories. So again, except for Robert Novak, they come out looking pretty good when it comes to protecting the identity of a CIA agent.
When it comes to protecting the identity of the source of the name of the CIA agent, not necessarily the CIA agent or operative herself. And I think that's the point, is that legal scholars on this issue say, look, these shield laws aren't to protect reporters. They're there to protect sources. And if sources are behaving in a mischievous or perhaps an illegal way, if they're doing to manipulate, if they aren't doing it to whistleblow, then they don't deserve that protection. And that sort of went splat in people's faces because of this trial. And I also think the other big thing that was revealed by this trial, and I'll just throw this out there and then I'll shut up, is that you got to see firsthand, a regular civilian, the cozy relationship in Washington between reporters and the people they're reporting on, and have a chance to guess at how that might affect or skew the news you're getting.
I think the phrase on background is something more people understand now than they did before all of this took place. I'm Julie Burstein. I'm probably the least familiar voice of the three of us right here. I'm in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm here with Brooke Gladstone and Brian Lehrer talking about the Louis Libby verdict, which just came down about an hour ago. Brian, what are you going to be looking for in the next few hours to see the kind of response from whoever is going to respond to this?
I don't know who's going to respond to it. You know, honestly, I think that most of the country is going to react with a shrug. There are much more important things going on right now over the treatment of our soldiers who need medical treatment, over the firing of U.S. attorneys, potentially for political reasons, the wars themselves still going on, lots of other things that people hold much more important. But I want to get back to this question of the cover-up, because Patrick Fitzgerald, the prosecutor, just held a news conference, and he defended the idea of bringing this case. And I think something that we'll hear in attacks on him in the next few hours is that this was a perjury case over something that was not even a crime, because they never determined that, you know, leaking Plame's identity was a crime because she wasn't that kind of undercover CIA agent. The law was very narrowly written. But he said Libby clearly lied to the grand jury, and so he had an obligation as a prosecutor, when the assistant to the vice president of the United States does that, whether it's to cover up a crime or just something politically embarrassing or just to help make their case on the war, that the government, meaning the prosecution, has an obligation to bring charges. So it was very interesting to hear Patrick Fitzgerald.
Well, Brian Lehrer, Brooke Gladstone, thanks so much for coming in to talk on short notice about this. I look forward to hearing how both of you analyze this over the next couple of days.
Thank you, Julie.
Thanks.